Yeah, welcome to Bus and Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Happy Saturday, everybody, listening to the broadcast. If you're catching us on the podcast, well, you're listening to us on Saturday, and we are stoked to be here. Jacob, Saturday, here we are. We've been winding down the week with some great episodes, some great shows. Jacob, man, you are not just chairman of the boards, but you are poet of the titles and headlines here at Busted Pencils. Some great podcast episode titles. I mean, when I got in, I get the, you know, you subscribe, listener, right? So you get your feeds. And, you know, I get into my car to commute home from work on Wednesday, and my Busted Pencils Wednesday drop comes up, the hill we DEI on, as we discussed.
I was quite proud of myself on that one, Johnny. My first one that I ever wrote for you guys was "This Is Not Okay, Lahoma."
Yeah,
for the last show, and I thought that was good. And then I don't know how I do it.
Yeah, man, if you keep it up, it's like not just chairman of the board, but like king of the poetic waxing of Busted Pencils episode titles. Also, listeners, this week, fun stuff. We had a woodpecker joined the show. I got some texts and messages in the mailbag and the voicemails about when can the woodpecker come back on the show? We want to hear more from the woodpecker. I'm like, no, you don't want to hear more. If you don't know what Jacob and I are chuckling about here, or I've seen, chop back into this week's drops and listen for the special guest, the woodpecker that showed up in the show. But getting to things, Jacob, I got to start this Saturday off asking you, man, how are you enjoying this time of year? Yeah, we talked hurdles and home runs Friday. We mentioned that both of us are hockey guys, and that's not technically a spring sport, so we didn't dive into it. But hey, it's Saturday broadcast day. It's anything goes. So how are you enjoying the time of year where we have college national championships going? We also have the push in the race to the playoffs for the NHLers. How are you enjoying hockey, man?
I'm enjoying this part of year very much. I'm in Wisconsin. It's 40 degrees. That means shorts, taking out the Speedo. You know, it's 40 degrees, hopping that lake. But I'm enjoying this part of the year, especially for hockey. I haven't been following the Frozen Four that closely. Back when I used to do radio myself, every year we're talking about Frozen Four. This year, I'm too busy being a producer to watch TV, Johnny. I got no time. But, and I'm hoping you can catch us up on this, I'm hoping that my beloved Denver is doing well this year. So I have no idea.
They are doing really well. Denver, wagon of a college hockey team. Great school downtown. Small little school. I was surprised to see, you know, a sports mega team in hockey have such a small campus, but I can dig on that. Great school. Denver made it to the Final Four, so big showing. Frozen Four, they call it in the hockeys, but lost. They were upset. Some might not say upset, but I mean, there's a wagon of a team coming out of nearby, Jacob, Western Michigan, Kalamazoo, Michigan, Western Michigan Broncos. First time ever. Well, actually, this Frozen Four, two teams for the first time ever have advanced that far. Western Michigan and Penn State. But nice. Western Michigan Broncos, woo, big win in double overtime against your Denver team. Fun win, big showing. Big shout out to Western Michigan. And Busted Pencils listeners that might not be hockey fans or followers like Jacob and I, but your Busted Pencils listeners and followers, your pencil busters out there, you might remember and know we have quite a few Western Michigan guests on the show. They got a Grow Your Own teacher program, teacher apprentice work over in Michigan. And we've had some really great students from Western Michigan University on the show. You can loop back around and catch those episodes. We've had the dean of the College of Education talking about that really strategic and smart move in the state to think about apprenticeship programs for teachers, for people to become teachers. This is really cool, Jacob, just to kind of loop you back around, because listeners also remember Jacob is a new member of Busted Pencils. Not brand new today. I mean, he's been with us all week, so he's been dealing with Tim and Johnny's antics.
But it ain't easy. It ain't easy, Johnny.
Hey, man, hats off to you. Actually, I'm keeping my hat on because I got headphones over. They're locked in. That's the style that Jacob and I have today.
I'm keeping mine on because I'm bald.
Yeah. But bald head, hat, headphone locked in. But nonetheless, Jacob's newer to us. But Jacob, Tim and I, big fans of the teacher apprenticeship programs around the country. And that's, in a sense, where colleges of education certify teachers to help prepare future teachers to be ready to teach in our classrooms. And, you know, so like they go to college to become a teacher.
Yeah.
But the pathway to becoming a teacher for more people, I'm going to get into this in today's show, to make it more accessible, to say if I might, maybe I'm, you know, a lot of teachers, they're like 18, 19 in college, like, hey, you know, I'm going to change my degree, or I've known I've always wanted to be a teacher, so I'm getting a degree in education and becoming a teacher. That's one pathway to becoming a teacher. That's sort of the traditional route. I hate that word traditional, but sort of the more common accessible route. You go to college, become a teacher. But there are so many of us that might have gone into a different career. Maybe, you know, like I studied chemical engineering, or I'm a computer programmer, I do marketing, or I'm in broadcasting or sales. Like, there's a lot of different things we do and we go to school for, or that we're doing in our community. Maybe I decide, hey, actually, I think I pretty much like, I really enjoy the education component of my job. I like training the people around me. I like working in groups. I think maybe I should try my hand at being a teacher. I've been told I'm a pretty good teacher. Maybe I want to become a teacher. Well, the pathway hasn't always been so accessible. And so places like Western Michigan, and they're around the country. This is what brought me to it, is their hockey team's going to the national championship, right? But the idea that they said, hey, we need a way for more non-traditional students in our community to become teachers. Opportunities for where we had a guest on the show. She is a bus driver in a district. So I really, really love what's happening in the schools. I like being around kids. I'm a bus driver, but I didn't get a teaching degree. Well, what she can do is she can access apprenticeship funds, and through her role as working in the school district as a bus driver, also partner with the school and Western Michigan University to do online classes, to do some hybrid, you know, sometimes Saturdays she was talking about school, sometimes on the weekend, but a different format than the traditional go to college, go to class kind of format, where people who are the great educators in our community that don't hold the title of teacher have a pathway to becoming a teacher. So great stuff over at Western Michigan with their teacher apprenticeship, Grow Your Own program. And then we got another big guest, two guys who come on the show pretty regularly from Western Michigan. You know, Jason, who comes and talks to us about AI with Tim and the AI bug over the last year of, you know, listeners, you know, Tim and his AI, he loves the stuff. He's actually gotten me to come around more on it. I'm seeing it grow and sort of learning ways that it brings value to my teaching and to the conversations my students are having as they're becoming teachers. Certainly becoming very quickly part of everybody's workday life, AI. So those conversations with Jason over at Western Michigan have been fabulous. And then our guy, Julian Vasquez Healy, man, he always is joining us pretty semi-regularly to talk about Jacob, all things, but especially has been a long go-to guest when it comes to DEI work, diversity, equity, inclusion. You know that thing, the hill we DEI on? Some of us, most of us, educators really, by and large, if you care about kids, then DEI is part of what you do. But we were talking this last week about how it's become almost its own three-letter word. Like, just saying DEI is in itself a valued statement. It's an adjective. It's used in a really divisive way to kind of take attention away from, on Wednesday's show, Jacob, I was talking about, well, diversity means this, you know, it's a condition of difference upon which everything exists. Equity means this. I mean, like, we have a definition for what it means to value equity. It's a core democratic value. Inclusion, well, that's just everybody participates. Everyone has a right to participate in a democracy. So these are three core democratic values. But then Tim and Jacob, you also pointed out, but DEI exists in this moment as its own word. Kind of like I might say, you know, like something's cool or something's not cool, or, you know, something's like awesome, right? I use the word awesome, but in linguistics and rhetoric right now, especially political discourse, DEI is used as sort of like a, as an adjective to sort of highlight that something is in some way anti-American. Mm-hmm. And this is the juxtaposition that I'm like most frustrated with, but I get it in terms of how it exists. Like I can keep saying the definition of this is what diversity means. This is what equity is. This is what inclusion is. And I'm just like a nerd getting blue in the face about words politically and like literally like just losing oxygen to my face because I'm just using it all as air going out of my body to talk about the definitions of what it means to value diversity, equity, and inclusion. These are three core democratic values that got put together in a three-letter acronym that has become a word, DEI.
That process has helped to kind of, oh, I'm not against diversity. I'm against DEI. You know, you can, it's shorthand to get, you don't have to say, oh, I don't like diversity. You just, I don't like DEI.
Yeah, and it's, we even talked about it, Jacob. We've like talked about these ideas like, can you be against DEI and for diversity? Or, you know, like it's the way language works to move us away from things to illuminate certain meanings and hide others. And it's a tricky business. So we're going to get into it, though, today on the broadcast, Jacob, now that we're caught up. You know, in the next segment, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about, like, how do we get here talking about this hill we DEI on, right? And diversity, equity, and inclusion, and specifically executive orders and what have they meant and how can we understand them here at Busted Pencils and in our communities. This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Johnny Lupinacci here with Jacob, chairman of the board. King poet of the podcast titles. My guy, more of us when we come back. Welcome to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. That's right. We're back from that first segment. Jacob and I are all caught up. It's Saturday afternoon. Pencil busters out there, listeners, if you're new and you're just catching us on the civic media airwaves, welcome to Busted Pencils. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci here, educated educator, without my co-host today, Dr. Tim Slecker, who you all love and adore and yearn for more.
Yearn for Tim.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that as we close the show. He is not gone for good just for this Saturday. He's just out making a move. We've followed Tim's moves around, and we'll let him talk about it more next week when he slides back into the host seat and I slide back over to co-host at Busted Pencils. But excited to be here with you listeners and with Jacob, our chairman of the board. His executive powers over the producer boards there, replacing the beloved Jess, who's out there crushing it in her educational journey, next steps towards her career in the medical health sciences. Love that move. Love that work for you, Jess. If you're listening out there, we appreciate you. We miss you. But boy, you got Jacob ready for the big stuff with us. We've had a doozy of a week, listeners, and we're back talking about education, Busted Pencils here. We had mentioned, I mean, Jacob, yes, I'm going to keep saying it, just the wordsmith. I love words. Listeners know this. I'm a little over-obsessed with words and what they do. But Jacob, love the titles. And One of them this week, the Hill We DEI on, class in session. We chopped it up. And as I usually do, I get really stuck on words. And I'm like, let's define them. Let's talk about what they mean. And as the week wound down, and in my classroom, for new listeners and folks, we're bringing you up to speed. I teach teachers, former teacher in Michigan, Midwest guy, love the Wisconsin area, get to come over there quite a bit. But now I'm a professor over in the state of Washington, teaching teachers social studies methods and all kinds of different courses and educational policies and school procedures. But I'm a teacher and I love teaching in this country. I love teaching everywhere I've been able to teach. I love working with teachers all over, and I do a lot of that and get to talk to so many of you out there through Busted Pencils and through working with teachers across this country. And I'll tell you what, Jacob, on both, because we're so polarized as a country now, on both sides of the political spectrum, I have met some amazing teachers who are highly capable of not only teaching children in this country, but teaching all children, who talk about it that way, who say they meet and greet all the children who come to their school with open arms, open minds, and in the caring capacity of sharing with them what they're great at teaching to help prepare them to be stronger citizens, to grow into being, you know, great people in this country, in this world. They are, to me, political heroes. Teachers out there, you're political heroes. You're doing the work of democracy every day to teach young people the power of democracy, the way to be a citizen in our community, to be a strong learner, to being an empathetic, a caring person, to contribute, to work hard, to do all those things, to have literacy, like scientific literacy and, you know, the ability to read, right? To learn multiple languages or to accept lots of languages, to understand how to communicate with one another. I think it's so important, the work that teachers do, not just because I'm a teacher or because I get to visit so many classrooms, but because it's important political work. And I emphasize that a little bit from a soapbox today in this segment, because there's been some executive orders, Jacob. We've talked about them here on Busted Pencils. And Tim has brought up a concept that he often uses. He says, I'll say, but Tim, I don't think word for word that's what the executive order is saying and doing. But Tim talks about the chilling effect that discourse has, that these orders have, that court cases have, that news stories have, that headlines have.
Absolutely.
And I'm down with it. Yeah, I'm down with it. There is an effect. Language works in a way where it highlights certain things, it illuminates, you know, them, and then it backgrounds or shadows other things, right? And so what are some of the effects of language and discourse and policy? Is one of those is there's a chilling effect. There's a ripple effect of what does it mean when we have these accusations. But, you know, let's get into it a little bit over this next segments here, because we're going to take a break in just a little bit for our, you know, mid-hour news break. But we had the discussion on Wednesday about DEI. Remember it, Jacob? The Hill We DEI on.
How could I forget my own genius turn of phrase?
Yeah. And we were really, you know, I was hammering on the concepts, diversity, equity, inclusion. But I was realizing as the week was going on, and we were talking about it in class, that my students and I, we were having conversations. We were saying, like, where's this coming from, though? Like, let's talk about what are some of the, like, what, like, we looked at the executive orders, right? And we were really like, what exactly are those executive orders? And in particular, related to a semi-local story, now national, and maybe one we'll even talk about next week, because it was a great conversation in class this week. But, you know, I'm over here in Washington State, not too far from beautiful state of Idaho. Again, they get a bad rap in education because they're, I think, 48th in the country in terms of how much they spend on education.
But don't let that distract you from the truth.
Don't let that, like, misrepresent that there are good teachers and there's amazing people, you know, in all places. That's part of the whole reason why this, like I say, teachers are out there doing really important political work. Not the kind of political work, though, that the current administration, and I'm gonna just say federal administrations often have assumed about teachers. And that goes for both Democrats and Republicans right now. It just so happens to be a particular kind of Republican leadership right now. I won't even at this point, Jacob, call it Republican. It's a particular kind of Republican administration right now.
And certainly not conservative as we've understood it for the last 100 years or so.
And not in the way we've understood it. It does not mean to conserve anything. So irony aside, though, in that there's executive order that has, you know, been targeting classrooms and teachers, in essence, turning classrooms into battlegrounds. You know, Idaho teacher was asked to take down a very simple billboard, you know, all students are welcome here, or something like that. And are those the times that we're in where we really can't do what all of us understand as teachers as important work? Well, on top of that, like tracing it back, where does this come from? It's not new. There's been a long history of sort of blaming teachers or making classrooms political battlegrounds, but it's generally not our best representation of democracy when we're doing that. But in particular, I'm going to get to this, introduce it, and we'll go to the break, and we'll come back, and we'll break down main ideas in it. But on January 29th, there was an executive order from the presidential office ending radical indoctrination in K-12 schooling. We're going to get into that. What is radical indoctrination, and what in the world are they accusing teachers of doing, and how can we understand it to keep supporting teachers out there doing the important political work of strengthening democracy when we get back. Hey, welcome back. Plus Essentials, fully leaded education talk. Second half of the hour today. Love being here with you, listeners. Pencil busters out there. Jacob, chairman of the board's here with us, running the sound. Thank you, Jacob, for being here with us Saturday. Love it.
Johnny, I found that generic music that we can use, and we're not going to get sued, but I think Rage Against the Machine should sue whoever made that generic song, because that was pretty close.
It was pretty close, and I like the energy. I like the sound. Jacob, great job finding that stuff. Again, listeners, if you miss our bumper music, so do we. But we're doing it right here. You know, we're taking it down to ground zero. We're rebuilding. We're not rewriting things with false accusations like the current administration is trying to do with federal overreach and executive orders on education. That's right. I'm firing shots a little bit on that one, but I can back it up, and I really do believe we've been talking so much about this, Jacob, but in particular, teachers and I talking this past week and listening to Busted Pencils and reading the messages that listeners, pencil busters out there, you send us, and love to hear your experiences and share some of those stories with us. We appreciate it. But looking back at this week, folks really diving into, like, how did we get here to where, and I'm just use this example, a teacher has to take down a bulletin board in her classroom that says all children are welcome here. I mean, it's a simple, common practice. Kids should feel safe and like they belong in order to be good learners, not just a couple kids, not just the rich ones in our community, right? Not just the ones with a particular, you know, ethnicity or racial identity, not just the ones who identify in simple ways, as we've learned in the last, I would say, more than 10 years, but especially in the last 5 to 10, like science has told us, children have told us, grown folks have told us, our family members have told us, people in our broader human community have continued to tell us, we identify differently than just male or female. Yes, there is more than just the two genders that we are biologically assigned at birth. by the complex medical process of looking at parts. That's right. So we've had doctors on Busted Pencils. We've had, you know, science folks, you know, biology teachers and biologists. And one of my favorite guests is Dr. Ethan Siegel, who's a science writer and talks to us. I mean, he's an astrophysicist, but he's in general, he translates scientific findings in ways that not only children can read them, but the general public can have conversations and digest scientific consensus in an everyday way. Love you, Dr. Ethan Siegel, for what you share. And he came on and talked to us about how not only science, but the people in our communities, backed by science, have been saying this for a really long time. And it's very, very scientifically true. It's socially true. And so, again, back on that, hey, we have more than two genders. That's right. And I have to say that because I'm clapping back to the constant droning discourse that is akin to the executive order by the federal government titled Ending Radical Indoctrination in K-12 Schools. What I was just saying, Jacob, to you and to the listeners and the pencil busters out there was based in fact. I was citing published scientific studies along with people who write about those published scientific studies and sharing them not as my political belief, but as scientific and political consensus, right? These are facts I'm sharing. And one might say I'm educating. If you hadn't known about those things, you're learning about it in this educational space, Busted Pencils. It's a little different than a classroom. And Jacob, I'm picking on you. You're a little different than a kid because, I mean, you're of adult age, so you're consenting by being here, and you have power and agency to get up and leave or to stop the broadcast and all these kinds of things. So I get it, listener. It is different than, say, your seven-year-old in class. But there are folks who would constitute what I shared as radical indoctrination. Simply sharing information that is important, and say they might also say it's anti-American right now under this kind of battle of political discourses in classrooms. They might say if I was teaching a science lesson like that related to that, maybe in genetics, I'm using things to say like, hey, even though we have many different genetic compositions and understandings of who we are as humans, we also have identities, and those identities and genders are many, right? And we are to understand that. I could be considered by this administration as anti-American. I don't know, Jacob, but I'm kind of hammering at it. When it got to be that to be informed and to practice, have the agency and freedom to practice my beliefs based on information was anti-American, where knowing stuff became unpatriotic. I mean, this is ludicrous to me. So I want to, when did this happen? Not only when did it happen, because I'm asking that as tongue-in-cheek, little rhetorical question out there. I know pencil busters and there's historians who can call in and talk. We could trace the history, and I'd love to do that. You know, it's what us nerds sometimes do, ask where and when did something start to happen. And we have these great folks in our community called historians who help us understand what's happened in the past and how we got to where we are. But so I say that tongue in cheek. But Jacob, you know what I'm saying? Where, like, when did we get to a point where knowing stuff from people whose job it was to get us the best information, right, become anti-American? Like, when did being the best become anti-American? Because it didn't for me. I know when I cheer USA at like a hockey game for the national team, I'm cheering because there are the best of the best out there playing. And I'm proud of them because they come from communities like yours, like mine, right? They look different, right? They come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, and they are the best of the best. They worked so hard, and they are given information from the best of the very best coaches, right? Same thing for any other sport. I lean on the sports analogy, but I'm proud of them. I couldn't think of anything more American, honestly. And yeah. So then and Canadians listening are like, well, hockey is more Canadian. We won the Four Nations. Oh, yeah, I get it. But
for now,
you know what I mean. So when in the world did it come to be that to learn the very best information from scientists, from experts, from historians who tell us things like, hey, slavery happened. Here's the kinds of facts around it. Mm-hmm. And we need to know about it because, hey, it's not anti-American to say in our history, in our past, are some practices that we don't believe ought to be carried forward. And in fact, need to be attended to, need to be understood because they were not okay. They did not acknowledge that we are all humans, part of a community together, that we all have intrinsic value, that we all are equal and ought to be like met with equity in our communities. These are core democratic principles. So practicing democracy means learning about how we weren't always great at acknowledging everyone's right and value to participate in the democracy. When did that get to be un-American? I mean, some friends might say, well, it's always been American to practice racism. It's been in the fabric of this country for so long to discriminate, to subjugate, to oppress. And I get that perspective. So what I'd like to suggest is for a lot of us, and I think it's growing, a lot of teachers I talk to say, when did it get to be un-American to want to be better? And in order to be the best, to understand the mistakes of the past so that we don't repeat them, right? Rather than to revert to making those mistakes and then positioning them. So I guess we're in a moment where we're battling over what does it mean to be American? What does it mean to be a democratic citizen? Well, I've been jabbering battle, on. Johnny, Jacob. Yeah, kick it to you, man. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it makes me wonder, especially with things like these executive orders and the wide definition of what does constitute something like DEI or what is woke. I think a lot of people, there are people who are just completely on one side of the issue and or completely on the other side. But there are swing voters in America. There are people with open minds. And I think there are people who ended up voting for Donald Trump in 2024 who might have felt a little queasy about particular cases, especially when you ask people. It's usually nothing in, you know, it's not in their kids' school. It's a horror story they heard on a podcast that happened one time in the country somewhere. I wonder when people like that come out and they see things like a simple sign that says everyone is welcome here, being called DEI or woke and being forced to take that down, a sign that I think, for me, I'm 25 years old. That's something in the 2000s when I was going to school that would be perfectly normal sign. I think for a long time now in this country, something that is not what I think most Americans would consider an extreme message of political ideology. And likewise, you see with these executive orders or just policies within the federal government now in the Department of Defense. Hey, you know, soldiers who broke the color barrier, we're getting that off the website. Women who, you know, the first female general, let's get that off the website. I don't know if that's what that middle group of Americans ever thought was too far. And when Donald Trump is undoing, you know, we're going to get rid of the executive order Lyndon Johnson signed to get rid of segregation in the federal government. Is that what most people are going to be okay with? And I think, you know, for good news to have, going forward, we might have a situation where those people who swung one way might swing just as much back the other way now that they see what Trump views as woke and what Trump views as DEI.
Yeah, Jake, well put, man. And I love hearing about your educational experience because across generations, we have such a different experience.
Totally.
I think that's so important to bring up because, listener, you have different generational experience. I mean, we have callers and people who write to us who, you know, have lived through, you know, several more decades than even Tim or I have. And we love that wisdom because what we know here at Busted Pencils, I say it, and I can't find the exact quote for it. So I can't say that I can't actually cite him for it, but I'll say Mark Twain was, you know, purportedly had said somewhere that history does not repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I love that.
Yeah.
Right. Because if we don't understand how mistakes of the past are made or even successful moments of things, if we don't understand our history. We don't really know what direction we're going. We're just like, I hate to say this because it's very ableist of me. It's also woke for me to say ableism, and I'm okay with that. But, you know, it's like we're flying blind. We're going no plan into the dark, right? No plan, no flashlight, no night vision goggles. Just boom, just steadfast forward into uncharted territory. When there is plenty of access to, we could have stopped for lights. We could have waited till morning. We could have gotten maps. We could have talked to people who have walked this path before, right? And yes, history doesn't exactly repeat itself, but it rhymes. Mark Twain purportedly had said that. I'm always looking. Listener, if you know where I can grab a citation for that, that isn't, you know, Google quotes, that can actually place it to a page somewhere, right? I got a Busted Pencils t-shirt. I will personally mail you, you know, Busted Pencils swag. You can get it. That's a little segue that I hadn't planned, but get it at the BustedPencils.com website, right? Or Civic Media. You can grab awesome Civic Media merch or Busted Pencils swag t-shirts and stickers and all kinds of great stuff. But I will personally send you a Busted Pencils t-shirt and a letter of thanks with a picture of me giving a thumbs up. Because I have been trying to quote that in my publications for years. And I can't nail it down to an actual time that Mark Twain said that, but I love it. History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, something like that. Mark Twain purportedly had said it. Pencil busters out there are going to find it for me. Jacob, when we come back, man, let's talk a little bit about that executive order and points of contention I have with some very specific language. Shouldn't be a shock there. Johnny's obsessed with words. When we come back, Busted Pencils. Welcome back, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. That's right, listener, if you've been tuned in, you know, no Dr. Tim today, just one blue-collar scholar with you here, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, but not alone. I have with me Chairman of the Boards, our producer, Jacob Morgan on the boards.
Never get love tired of here with us. Never get tired of hearing Chairman of the Boards.
That, man, I that love is good. It. Yeah. That's a good one. He likes it. Also, wordsmith, waxing the titles of our podcasts, word waxing, and we'll call it. Jacob, king of the podcast titles, has a couple of bangers this last week. My favorite being The Hill We DEI On. And yes, this show, we've been DEI-ing. We've been talking a little bit about that, especially in relationship to the executive order that and the chilling effect that all this discourse and policy, so the executive order is a form of policy, right, has impacted our everyday classrooms, right? What's happening on the ground? That blue-collar scholar aspect of me, like seizing the factory floor, the lines of production, teachers out there doing the political work of, you know, educating about democracy all around our country. Said it's important political work today. Under threat from not just that chilling effect, but directly under executive order January 29th that came out. Yeah, it's a little late, but that's how chilling effects work. It's not the next day. It's not the next week, although in that case, it had started pretty quickly across our country. But it's over the following months and even years sometimes that we see how words, especially words with power, reshape the landscapes and the relationships of our very own democracy. One might even say, changing what it means to be American. Some may say, making what I think being American is better. I'm kind of saying this couldn't be more anti-American from what I would hope it is to be American. I mean, we are arguing over what does it mean to be American here on Busted Pencils. And I would say, what does it mean to support public education and democracy? And if that means I'm anti-American, well, them's be fighting words. Because I'm damn proud to be a teacher in this country.
Yeah.
Loyal to the soil. It's not my own soil. It's not my ancestors' soil. So I'm welcome. I feel welcome to be here. Honored that as child of an immigrant family, that I was been able to be part of what I consider to be a really awesome place to be. I think, Jacob, you talked about the middle today.
Yeah.
Right? There are a lot of us in the middle who are trying to figure out how do we get out of this mess where the left is mad at the right is mad at the left. They've, in some ways, forgotten about why and what it means to be part of a democracy. And they're just pissed at each other. And they're exchanging blows. And as a result, our classrooms have become a battleground for that exchange, in particular under the executive order, right, ending radical indoctrination in K-12 schools. What does it do, right? Well, it's accused us of doing something called discriminatory equity ideology. I'm laying that out there in the last segment because I think we're going to talk more about it next week, but discriminatory equity ideology and patriotic education to frame a debate, right? Really to chime in on what at least the presidential administration right now thinks is acceptable, considered acceptable in our classrooms, which begs the question, should a president have authority over what's acceptable in our classrooms? Should the president have a say, not just a say, but a powerful one, right? Which brings up the question of federal influence over local education. I've said it here on the show before, mini social studies lesson here in the last few minutes of class in today's broadcast. Education is a state right. So check yourself, Mr. Trump. But as long as I can remember, education is a state right. So we have local control over education. So we are getting, the overreaching executive orders, firing shots at our teachers, turning our classrooms into battlegrounds, accusing them of radically indoctrinating students. You can make all the accusations you want. You don't get to have a say. Education is a state right. So those executive orders also challenge that state right. So it's not, when I say making our classrooms a battleground, it's not just about what we teach in classrooms, but it's putting our classrooms in the figurative crossfire of a federal government saying, we want more power. And one of the powers you have is to say what is taught and how it's taught in your schools. And you know what? We're going to flex on that. But interestingly enough, across our country, and especially in Wisconsin, where so many of you listeners are tuned in, conservatives, people who identify as conservatives, actually have strong support for local schools. And you believe strongly in state rights. So your federal government right now, which is why I say a particular kind of Republican federal government, is not just firing shots at our classrooms, but saying, we not only want to tell you what you do in your classrooms, we want to remind you that we think we should have federal control over your state rights. So I will kind of wrap things up there, Jacob, today, saying we're going to dive more into that because we're going to get Tim back. And, you know, Tim's going to come back and he's going to say, yeah, Johnny, I like what you were talking about. But as Tim always does, we go back and forth. He's going to say, but, and he's going to have, I bet for you all, one humdinger of a class in session. So stay tuned and be ready for it. Jacob, it's been fun to talk with you this Saturday.
It's been great talking with you too, Johnny. Had a great time.
And now for your moment of zen. Education becomes most rich and alive when it confronts the reality of moral conflict in the world. Oh, listeners, thanks for tuning in to Busted Pencils broadcast today. Remember, you can grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. But of course, you can always find it at the Civic Media website or visit us at BustedPencils.com. Don't be late for homeroom on Monday. Make sure you can catch next week's class in session on Wednesday. And you'll find us for hurdles and home runs on Friday. And of course, just like today, you can always catch us across the pencils to broadcast 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for an hour of your favorite blue collar scholars, Tim and Johnny. Keep busting pencils. Yeah. What you got? Tastes so sweet.